This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, the Bear, Chris Felica from Fox Sports will join us, and we will discuss a little bit of everything. College football, we're down to our final four here. The semifinals are set. NFL Week 18. And we'll do some baseball, too, with Bear. Last time we had him on, if you remember, it was basically like right before, an hour before Soto signed with the Mets. So we'll revisit the offseason, get his thoughts on some sleeper teams. He's always making baseball bets, and he's good at these futures and awards too, so we'll get his thoughts on that. But I'll start with college football, as we are down to four teams. We are down to our semifinal. Notre Dame will be laying 1.5 to Penn State. Ohio State will be laying 6 to Texas. So one of Notre Dame or Penn State, one of those two teams is going to be playing for a national title, which is different. It's new. It's kind of it's fun to have new blood, but it is kind of strange to wrap your head around. But let's face it, if they call pass interference, offensive pass interference, which it was on Cam Scataboo, the Arizona State running back, down 16, 5 or 6 minutes left on New Year's Day in that game. If they properly make that call, Arizona State probably doesn't get back in that game. And we are looking at four duds because the games just weren't great. I mean, Texas-Arizona State turned into a fascinating game, and I know Arizona State got robbed with the targeting, but hey, that was offensive pass interference on Scataboo, and you start to go down this rabbit hole of, that was a bad call, this was a bad call. So that it can be tedious. It can be, there's always questionable calls against both teams in any game, and I understand if you're Arizona State, you're furious, but hey, if down 16, that comeback just came out of nowhere. Arizona State couldn't do anything. Well, they know Texas didn't do much either, but the bottom line, the games were not great again. New Year's Eve, Penn State, Boise, a little misleading of a final. I think pretty misleading of a final because Boise left 13 points on the board, two missed field goals. Then the touchdown that got wiped off the board with the hands to the face, which was the right call, but it was away from the play. You didn't really need to call. I don't think we got a great replay on it. But so, Boise was more competitive with Penn State than the 17-point final score indicates, but Penn State had chances to put the game away too. Oregon-Ohio State was over before it started. And by the way, enough. You can have Dan Lanning. Enough of the Dan Lanning stuff. I know he's a good coach. I know. Look, I'm not one of these guys, hey, you can't win the big game, but we can all pump the brakes, I should say, on Dan Lanning being one of the greatest coaches of all time here. His team completely no-showed on New Year's Day against Ohio State. His team completely no-showed last year against Washington as 10-point favorites when they had a chance to go to the playoff, and they got run out of the building by the underdog Washington State. So we can pump the brakes, I think, a little bit. We can all calm down a little bit on Lanning before he actually wins a big game. We can knock him down a level or two. He is not on a lot of the great coaches retired. Saban and Harbaugh moved on to the NFL, and it's basically just Kirby Smart. There's not that many active coaches that have won championships, but that was a terrible performance from Oregon. And again, the games weren't that good. Georgia, Notre Dame. I think if you played 10 times, probably 5 each, 6-4 one way or the other. Georgia had plenty of chances early. They fumble deep in Notre Dame territory. Then they get a drive. When they're up 3-0 too, they get a drive. I think when it was scoreless where they have to go back 15 yards because the kid was in the way, they get a sideline interference. Even then, hey, they're 3-3, 3 minutes to go in the half, quick 3-and-out. They give up a field goal, and then the game unravels. The game completely unravels. Fumble return for a touchdown in the final 30 seconds of the first half, and then the opening kickoff of the second half when it's a 10-point game gets returned to make it a 17-point game. And then it was I don't say you could turn the game off from there. Georgia had chances in Notre Dame territory twice. Down 10 and then again down 13 where they got stopped on fourth down. And any touchdown there, any sort of conversion, any sort of touchdown there makes it a one-score game. And then all of a sudden, if you're nervous, you are nervous if you're Notre Dame because you hadn't done much offensively. I mean, they only had 200-something yards of offense. They only had 4 yards per play. But hey, you score 14 points on defense and special teams. You don't need to do too much defensively. So Georgia gets eliminated. They didn't have much of an offense. Just not the typical passing game, the pass catchers that we're used to seeing. Look, they played well enough defensively to win. And again, if they played 10 times, they probably split. That's not like, Notre Dame was far and away the better team. Georgia let chances slip away early. And then, they don't have the kind of offense. This is not the kind of vintage Georgia team where you can just give away 14 points in a game that's a pick 'em, or, they're a 1-point underdog and the total's low at 44.5, 45. You just give away 14 points like that. Defense special teams is just very, very hard to overcome. And you fumbled in plus territory. So Georgia's out. And we have our semifinals. Once again, the games were okay. game's okay. It was fun having the game on Thursday afternoon, obviously under tragic circumstances with it being postponed. But that was kind of a fun wrinkle. Texas, Arizona State, Arizona State made the game very fun. And again, if it weren't for that late rally, and that wasn't really a good game until 5-6 minutes left. Oh, Arizona State, touchdown, at least they're going to cover. And wow, they're going to tie it. Wow, it's going overtime. So that game got really good. I don't want to say you'd just be too negative, but the games for the most part have, and I was excited for this 12-team playoff. The games have not been, overwhelmingly good to say the least. And it looks like Ohio State's going to win a championship. And let's be honest, they look dominant. The wide receiver Smith is just incredible. I mean, kid's awesome. And it would be kind of fitting if ironic if after how bad they were against Michigan, we sat here, for a month. Oh man, I can't believe they, got beat 17, 18 point favorites, whatever it was. Completely lay an egg. Ryan Day is going to be gone. You turn around and they're going to be holding up the trophy, 6 weeks later, which I don't like the fact that they lost one game and then they laid another egg. And then it's, hey, no big deal. You're still in the playoffs, but it's becoming. And meanwhile, Oregon didn't lose all year. Then they won't lose, have one bad game and they're done. So definitely needs to be some rejiggering of the playoff seeding. Boise doesn't deserve a bye. Arizona State doesn't deserve a bye. If you do get the one seed, like Oregon did, you should have more of a reward than, hey, you get to play Ohio State in your first game and it's on a neutral field. That's got to be fixed. That's got to be ironed out. So we'll have time to talk the semifinals. But that is the college here is the finals. Semifinals are set. Two games next week, three games left in the season. Handful of bowls this week, six games left as we're recording this in the college football season. So it does go by quickly. On the NFL, mentioned this a little bit on the Monday show. Usually the final week of the season, week 17 in years past, week 18, so much drama, so many scenarios, scoreboard watching, this is happening, that can happen. If that team wins and this happens, there's a little bit of that week, but nowhere near what we're used to having. Right? Broncos are in with a win. Tampa is a 14-point favorite. They win the division, and they're in with a win after Atlanta threw up all over themselves on Sunday night. Minnesota, Detroit for the one in the division, that's a lot of fun. But other than that, man, everything else is pretty straightforward. The only thing we're really get interesting, if Cincy wins on Saturday and then the Chiefs can somehow make that game versus Denver competitive. And remember, it's Miami's ahead of the line in Cincy. So Cincy not only needs to win and the Chiefs to beat the Broncos, they also need the Dolphins to lose to the Jets. I think there's this perception that, as long as Cincy gets help from the Chiefs, they're going to get in. No, they're third in line here. And the idea that Miami could make the playoffs is kind of hard to wrap your head around because they've been such an afterthought, at least for me, for so many weeks. It feels like they've been eliminated, just not in the conversation. They haven't had Tua, back and forth in these games. Just feels like they've been done for a while. But hey, they are, it's a long shot parlay, but they are a two-team parlay away from being in the playoffs, which is just kind of hard to wrap your head around. But again, there's not a ton of interest. The one game, obviously, the Vikings and the Lions. And I mentioned this a little bit on the Monday show and a little bit with Thor on Tuesday. I'm going to go with Minnesota just because I think the worst unit of the four is the Detroit defense. And if you look, they gave up 7.5 yards per play to the 49ers. They gave up 6.5 yards per play to the Bears of all teams the week before that. They gave up 47 points to the Bills and then 31 points to the Packers. They gave up 78, 79 points in those 2 weeks of I had it written down, but you get the idea. They've gotten killed. They've gotten absolutely killed defensively. And I just think, I know that the Lions are home and that is a very impactful home field advantage. I just think the Vikings are more capable of piecing together a couple of stops here and winning this game. So I will go with the Vikings. That was 7.9 yards per play. So 8 yards per play last week for the 49ers. This defense for Detroit has been awful. Now, maybe the crowd noise gives him a lift. Maybe, Darnold turns the ball over and hey, one stop here might be all it takes. But I think Minnesota, as long as they don't turn it over and they got a coach that's going to go for it, both these coaches are going to go for it like crazy. Obviously going to be a high scoring game or you'd expect it to be. Total 56.5 here, 57, highest total of the season. I think Minnesota finds one or two more stops than Detroit. And I think they move the ball up and down the field. So I will go with Minnesota to get the all important one seed. That being said, this game is huge. It feels so important. Winner's got a good shot to the Super Bowl, to go to the Super Bowl. I think at least if you're Minnesota, hey, if we can get our games at home, we're going to be tough to beat. And if you're Detroit, probably the same thing where, hey, we can get a little healthier. So Philly still has a lot to say in this matter. Philly's really good. Philly's probably better than both these teams on a neutral field. I think they probably are. But as important as this game is, And it is important. I'm not going to downplay it. There's a very good chance these teams are meeting again in 2 weeks. And it's almost like, man, especially from a Minnesota perspective, man, I got to beat them in Detroit. I get a week off. Then I might have to beat them again. It's going to be hard to beat them. I know they've been bad defensively, but I don't love the idea of having to beat this team twice in a couple of weeks. And you know, as we talked about the other day, the NFC is just so wide open where I can't quite get there with Tampa and I really can't get there with Washington, but I'd say five or six of the seven teams, you know, at least being in the NFC title game, going to a Super Bowl, wouldn't shock me where who knows how Hurts comes back. Lions are vulnerable. Vikings are good. They're not great. The NFC is wide, wide open. So they're looking at a fun playoff. Then it's the big three in the AFC, Bills, Ravens, Chiefs. So excited for these playoffs. The NFL regular season product hasn't been great at times. I feel like the 1 o'clock window, you know, that early 3:30 to 4:30 when those games are ending, usually like week in, week out, it's just constant entertainment. I haven't felt that this year. And you just look, there's I think nine teams with, you know, three wins or less. There's just so many bad teams. Even a team like the Saints, which is just awful. The season ended right now, they're picking like 10th or 11th, and they're dreadful, dreadful to watch. I mean, you have the Browns and the Titans and New England, the Giants, the Jets, the Raiders. There's just so many bad, bad teams that I think it's hurt the league. But I think we are set up for an exciting, exciting playoffs. I am looking forward to that. So we'll see with the Bear things. Just quickly, I don't have a ton of picks here. Can you really lay 20 with the Ravens? I was doing the Megapod earlier with Gil Alexander and Wishnev. I give out Ravens minus 18. If I like it minus 18, why don't I like it minus 20? I mean, was it really going to land on 19? Probably not. I'll lay it with the Ravens. I know they're starting Zappi, and I'd prefer for my bet for DTR to start because I don't think he's an NFL quarterback. Not that Zappi is exactly Tom Brady here, but maybe Zappi can at least like throw the ball a little bit and get him in the back door while DTR was just completely overwhelmed. So I will still lay it with Baltimore. I'm not as enthusiastic just because I think Zappi can at least have a whiff of confidence, but I do like the Ravens. I like the Vikings, as I mentioned. There's not a ton. Again, a lot of these games, I mean, you really want to sit here and bet the Jags and the Colts? Do you really want to sit here and bet San Francisco, Arizona? Do you really want to sit here and bet the Giants and the Eagles? I mean, you get the idea of the game. Jets, Dolphins, the games this week with so many teams out of it, so many teams not playing for anything. It's really, really hard to come on here and suggest bets. Bills, Patriots with a chance at the one. Are they going to tank? Bears, Packers, do you want to lay 10 there? Cowboys, Commanders. I mean, it's an ugly, ugly slate. So I do not have a ton. I don't want to force anything and just give picks just to give picks. But the Bear, Chris Felica, he always has picks. We'll get his thoughts. College football, NFL, baseball. That is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him on Fox, Bear Bets podcast, Big Noon Kickoff. And it is the Bear, Chris Felica, joining us once again. Bear, we are recording this right as Georgia Notre Dame is about to kick off. So a little change of plans. Very unusual to have a Thursday afternoon playoff game. And obviously tragic scenarios, causing this. So not to be too callous, but it is different. But what's going on, man? Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no worries. Just recovering from yesterday and the thrill and the sickness of having to sit through a Texas money line bet that normally I don't kind of bridge jump like that, but that got a little hairy, but we survived and we got Ohio State through to help our futures. We have that Ohio State and Georgia versus the field at South Point from the beginning of the year. And we got Ohio State and Georgia in some cross-board parlay. So that was a really big result for me yesterday, getting Ohio State through to the semifinal.
We'll get to all the NFL matchups, maybe your thoughts on some of these awards, some baseball, because last time I talked to you, it was like an hour, literally like an hour before yep. Soto signed with the Mets, and we went on the record with our last-minute predictions because we kind of sensed it was close, and you said Mets, I said Yankees, so that was a check in your box. But we'll start Ohio State-Texas just because we have
you,
a
you,
line.
You laid 1,500 with the Yankees there, right?
Yeah, exactly.
With me, okay, so you follow me.
Ohio State, Texas, where does this line go? I mean, I know there was, you know, tweets circulating that it's going to be Texas by two, which was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Does this cross through the seven? Like what's your take on where this game goes and just your takeaway from the first three playoff games, if anything?
I don't think it gets north of seven. I see six is pretty much painted across the board. Now it's funny when right before, like an hour before that, the McMurphy tweet, I had sent Chris Andrews a note saying, well, what do we think? Ohio State six. And I said, I have a feeling you're going to say lower, and then you're going to say, but I like your number better. And I said and he said, yeah, my numbers actually have five, but I can see it getting to six pretty quickly, which I guess is a roundabout way of me saying, yeah, I do like your number better. And it did get to six pretty quickly. I think the hesitation by a lot of people in laying the, I mean, I took four, I laid 4.5 at the open with on DraftKings or FanDuel, whatever one it was, because I knew what it was going to get higher, and I'll have an easy opportunity to get off it if I want. But I can't see it getting higher than seven. You do have to give Texas a little bit of a tick for home field, even though Ohio State does travel a ton. But the fact that Texas doesn't have to get on a plane after being on the road last week, I think that's got to count for something. So I'm happy with where I am, just with holding on Ohio State minus 4.5, and we'll see who goes from there. I did say that I did ultimately think the winner of Ohio State Oregon would win the national championship. So we'll see what ultimately happens. But the derivative in the prop markets have been great, because you're still getting close to even money on Jeremiah Smith anytime touchdown. It was just ridiculous. But Texas has got to play. I mean, it has been alarming how they cannot seem to run the ball on good teams. It couldn't run the ball against Georgia in the SEC championship game. Couldn't run the ball yesterday against an Arizona State defensive line, which really didn't know how good they were. They ran on Clemson, but Clemson was a terrible rush defense. If they can't run at all against Ohio State, that's going to be a problem, because I know Huer has played really well in the overtime and made some throws, but he makes some throws that makes you go, wow. And he makes some throws that makes you go, wow. So, I don't know. They got to rely on him to beat his former team to get to the national championship game. I don't know if they ultimately have the offensive weapons to do it.
If you're starting a program with any coach, I think Lanning is on the very short list. I mean, Kirby Smart. Yep. I mean, Lanning might be two on that. That being said, 10-point favorite last year against Washington with a chance to go to the playoff. Laid an egg, didn't even show up, weren't really that competitive in the game. And part of this, I will admit, I had Knicks 14-1. I had Oregon futures. I picked Oregon before the year to win. So
yeah, we both had Oregon futures.
In my pocket a little bit, which is maybe shading this, but you got to come out with a better performance than that. Does the fact that, hey, last year they laid an egg, it's one thing if you know what, you lose 31-28, you know, Ohio State's a really good team. You had a bad draw, but is it starting to creep into your mind, man, maybe we're putting Lanning a little bit farther up than we should. And does that performance on Wednesday on New Year's Day change your opinion at all about, you know, him as a coach?
No, it doesn't. It says a lot more about the first meeting and Ohio State and the fact that the home field mattered, and the fact that Will Howard came out and said that, yeah, we kind of helped them in that game. We made a bunch of mistakes, and we certainly can clean things up and play better. And the fact that Ohio State's defense made a bunch of adjustments since that game really, really showed to matter. And Dylan Gabriel had a hell of a difficult time making the reads and making the throws. But yeah, it does not change my opinion of Lanning one bit. Look, this is a guy who, in his first game at Oregon a couple of years ago, played Georgia, I believe it was, in Atlanta. And I think they lost by a million. It's, yes, somewhere around there. Might have been a few less than a million. But to go into the playoff as the number one ranked team, it's the only undefeated team in the country, you got to give him world of credit. Won the beat Penn State, beat Oregon during the regular season, won a tricky road game against Wisconsin. Yeah, you're not gonna get me offering nothing but praise for Dan Lanning.
Yeah, and you look back, and you can give them credit for beating Penn State, but, man, they probably should have just – and I know teams don't, like, think like this, and athletes don't think like this. They were much better off being the five. Just from an odd standpoint, like, you just take a knee in that game and you're in better position.
That's the freaking problem with and we talked about it.
Yes.
Leading up to the bracket reveal, like, the committee, like, given the conference champions buys, which – whatever. I don't think it should be that. It should just be 1, 2, 3, 4, get the byes. But and we could see it coming that this was going to happen, where Boise was going to get a bye and the Big 12 champion potentially was going to get a bye. And like the sixth seed and the five seeds were going to be the spot to be. And here we are with Texas in the semifinal and Penn State beating an SMU team that in any other year wouldn't snip the playoff. And a Boise team that we kind of knew was going to be overmatched in that game. So, the fact that Penn State got an easier path to the semifinals than Oregon did. The fact that Oregon was an underdog in their first game of the playoff And then you got to look at the 3 and 4 seeds who were double digit under. It just didn't make sense. Bad deal for Oregon, but at the same time, I give Lanning and the team a lot of credit for not acting like me here and using that as an excuse and using that as a crutch. But I will stick up for them. And when next year, when the committee makes these changes and you don't see ridiculous paths like you did this year, we'll know that we were right.
Yeah, no good deed goes unpunished, because undefeated, you know, win the Big Ten, you sit there and you really get screwed in terms of the bracket.
Yep.
I know you have Ohio State in futures, and you know you're close to that program. Does it bother you just as a fan that they could lose a game and then lay a complete egg at home against Michigan, and no big deal, you're in the playoff comfortably? I know that there's positives to the 12-team playoff. I've come around more than I thought I would, but yep. does that bother you in any bit?
It doesn't bother me. I mean, look, the last time Ohio State won the national title, 2014, they lost a home game early in the year as a double-digit favorite, I think it was, to Virginia Tech. And then they wound up winning out and winning the national title as a dog in the Big Ten championship game, a dog in the national semifinal, and a dog in the title game. So I think the problem people might have with this is everyone wanted a Cinderella in the college football playoff. Like, the 12 teams, it's going to mean that a Cinderella could make a run. No. All it meant was the opportunity for this was going to happen. A team that had a hiccup or two, a power team, a penthouse level blue blood program, had a hiccup or two during the regular season and was seeded in the bottom half of the draw. And then they put together 3 or 4 games in the playoff where they showed the team that we all thought they could be. That's what this has done and allowed for Ohio State to really reach their max and their potential here. And what we've seen in the first 2 games, there's a reason I think they were still the second or third choice to win it all and to enter in the thing. People knew.
Sure. Switching gears to NFL, I can't remember. Maybe there's just some reasons you bias, but I'm not sure. I can't remember a final week of the season. Used to be week 17. Now it's week 18, where less was at stake. I used to love this week. So much drama, so many different scenarios, scoreboard watching. There's a couple things up for grabs. Tampa's a huge favorite to win a division. Denver, huge favorite to get the final spot in the AFC. But other than that, there's not a lot. But the one thing that does matter, the NFC North title game and the battle for the one seed, Vikings, 2.5-point underdogs in Detroit. Do you have a strong feel for this game? It does worry me a little bit. Everyone's kind of off of Detroit and jumping on Minnesota. A little bit the opposite last week with Green Bay. But that being said, who do you like here?
I would play the Vikings team total over would be the most confident wager I could make in this game, because like I said, the fact that everybody is on the Vikings here as a short dog, I think the numbers kind of telling you the Vikings are the right side, and Jeff Schwartz has laid out a pretty good case for this, just about playing everybody Monday night game, short week back across the country, like the workload of a 16 game regular season, not having a bye in a while. The injuries that they've had, like, it's a tough spot. So I would expect Minnesota at the very least to put up, I think, 27.5 was the team totals. I'd expect them to put 28 points on the board. Whether the Brian Flores defense can get a bunch of stops, I think that remains to be seen. But it will be interesting, because the winner gets the one seed and will have to play 2 games to get the Super Bowl on its home field. And I think especially for the Vikings, that's massive. And then the loser is going to go on the road and probably play Tampa, I think is ultimately how it will play out, right?
So, or the Rams, if the Rams drop to the Rams lose and drop to the 4, then it's, you know, Lions, Rams, or Vikings, Rams, and the Rams have done well against those teams. And then we might have a scenario where, hey, this is like the biggest game of the season. It is the biggest game of the season. If you're Minnesota and you win this game, you might have to turn around and beat Detroit your next game in 2 weeks, and you might have to beat them twice in 3 weeks, which would, man, that would make me nervous of, like, man, you're really going to beat this team twice in a row, twice in 3 weeks. But that might be the scenario. We'll see.
Feels like Ohio State, Oregon.
Yes.
Two best teams playing again.
Yeah. So you think Minnesota wins?
I don't want to say I do. I gun to head. Yeah. And that's a poor analogy. I'm sorry right there. I shouldn't have said that, but you forced me to make a pick here. Yeah, I would say Minnesota. They probably should have won the first game And I think they are a more complete team right now. You even said, like, the worst unit on the field is going to be the Detroit defense. So, yeah, give me Minnesota. And I know we'll be sitting here on late Sunday night watching that game when Detroit wins by double digits. We'll all be regretting. Hey, what do you think about the award stuff? Like, with Darnold now and the AP coming out and basically saying, hey, you vote for who you want to vote for. Like, what a shit deal for all of the bettors throughout the year who and maybe it's a little sour grapes on my part. Like, I got a Burrow plus 470 early in the year on comeback player of the year that I basically like had cashed and graded. And now it's like, what the hell? Like, the tell is kind of there that the AP voters know either Lamar or Allen's going to win MVP. They know Saquon's going to win Offensive Player of the Year, but they want to give Darnold something, and he probably deserves something. So what a shitty deal for people that had Burrow with some good numbers here.
Yeah, I'm not so sure because I had Mike Sando on about a month ago and I asked him kind of, hey, are you going to basically follow the rubric? And he basically, you know, didn't even let me like finish my question. Absolutely going to follow the rubric. If, you know, in that case, Darnold wouldn't be eligible. I'd be curious what Aaron Schatz, and trying to get him on at some point, but you know, they're going to pull these awards at some point also pretty quickly here where like, I know he doesn't tip his hand too much with who he's going to vote for, but like, I wanted to at least get his thoughts on like, hey, who in your mind are like the two or three finalists? Cause like if Darnold's a finalist in your mind, you're probably going to vote for him. It's sort of like Hamlin last year, where you're going to be all in or all out. Mm-hmm. Where like if you're even considering him, then you're ignoring the criteria and he's your guy, or you're not considering him all because of the criteria. So I don't know where that award is going. Like you said, I think what is Burrow like -300, -400 now?
Not even now. It's like
It's come down.
Oh yeah, it's like -170 or something.
Oh, well, it was -300 within like a day ago. So that has really taken some steam. And yeah, that's one where I have no feel for, you know, how they're going to interpret it. I really don't. And that's always kind of the one award where there's a lot of gray area. Mm-hmm. You know, last year it was controversial and now they're trying to add rules and the rules are making it more controversial almost.
Yeah, it's crazy too. Because it's funny because I just like to check where I am, like and see what's up and refreshed every, and then getting up this morning and I was listening to Dave Ross and I guess it was Jensen Lewis this morning and they were talking about awards. I'm like, let me see. And they mentioned the comeback player of the year. And I'm like, oh wow, let me look. And I'm like, oh my God. And then I saw like in the defensive player, like Patrick Surtain somehow was like -200 now to win the award. I'm like, when the hell did this happen? I know the Denver defense has been good. I mean, Watts had a good year. I know the Steelers have kind of come back down to earth a little bit lately, but like, how the hell is Surtain all of a sudden -200 to win this thing?
It's almost like MVP last year. It's just one of those years where there's not like a lock candidate, a legitimate, like, you know, typical defensive player of the year where, and similar where Purdy was going to win it last year, but then he falls off and you just have to almost give it to Lamar by default where, man, Parsons would be considered if Dallas is better. He's had a great year, but there's just not that guy. And it's just hard to give. It's so connected with the team where Watt and the Steelers coming back down to earth, I think is going to cost them the award. I haven't paid that much attention to that market, but that would be my thinking.
Yeah. I mean, he's still forcing a lot of fumbles. He's still making some impact plays. And I don't know. I mean, he was a guy that I think a lot of people last year thought could have won.
Right.
Didn't he wind up having better numbers ultimately than Myles Garrett did have in a lot of categories. So,
but hey, we know what these awards, the market doesn't, just because Surtain's the favorite, that doesn't mean that's the right move or that's the right number.
Yeah. So I'm gonna, again, I got some like Watt, like plus 425 from like preseason. So it's like, shit. I mean, I don't know what the hell to do now with that. So, I mean, laying $2 to try and guarantee a profit's kind of hard.
Yeah, but I've seen your tickets on O'Connell for Coach of the Year, and I think Flores for defensive assistant.
Yeah, that's going to lose. It's assistant coach. He's going to lose.
You think so?
Ben Johnson will win that award.
Has there been updated? Is that market refreshed?
I haven't seen that market listed on FanDuel since the day I made that wager.
That would be horrible. I have no idea. You got Flores at what, 30-1? That would be horrible.
39-1.
Oh, geez.
Yeah,
and they sometimes with awards, they don't offer cash outs, right? Are they offering
that one? They didn't. It's funny. They're offering me a like a cash out for like 75% on O'Connell, which I'm not going to do. They're offering me I had a Josh Allen preseason 8-1. They're offering me like 55% on that.
That's not enough.
I'm letting both of those go. But if they offered me a cash out on Brian Flores, I would absolutely take that.
Yeah. I mean, you're pretty sure Johnson's going to win. I think it's a coin toss, but man, does it matter who wins on Sunday? If the Vikings win, don't you give it to Flores? Did they give it to Johnson last year? I'm trying to think.
I don't know. That might
matter too. Would they give it to him 2 years in a row?
Truly, man, I'm gonna have to Google this while we discuss.
Yeah, I was just gonna do the same thing because I don't. Man, you could make a case for either one. What makes you think they're gonna give it to Johnson just because they do so many tricks last year? Okay, that does hurt you a little bit. What makes you think that? Just because there's so many like trick plays and everything with them? And
I think people see the Lions offense and in week in and week out just being fantastic. And I think that's probably the tell. People see offense. People see statistics for offense more than they do.
Right.
Just knowing that a defense is well-coached and
disguise their coverage, things like that. Yeah, it's hard.
Exactly. And it's the same thing like, in college football with Heisman voters too. And just with the public this year, with the Travis Hunter hate, they couldn't read. Paul, he only has three or four interceptions or whatever. Yeah. It's because nobody throws over there at him. Like that's the thing. Like I've seen the Kirby Joseph all of a sudden is like 10-1 to win defensive. Like they're the one of the worst defenses in the NFL. Yeah. He's got some interceptions, but that probably tells you something that they're just teams are throwing a lot because the Lions offense is so good.
Yeah, and it's true. It's almost like in baseball on defense, where you can measure a little bit more now, but a shortstop, that's great. Like, what are you going to measure by other than, like, errors, like the old traditional stats? It's like you have to watch the game to realize how good he is. But, look, Ben Johnson, he's a really good coach. Maybe he'll be coaching your Jets once you draft Milroe. He can,
that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for Milroe top 10 to learn.
He did declare for the draft just a few minutes ago. Did you see that?
For the Saskatchewan Rough Riders in 2025, 26.
Man, like I think these quarterbacks smell blood and say, hey, if not now, when? Let me just, even though my stock is low, it's such a bad class, let me just go and see what I can do.
Yeah, it was funny. It was funny. Well, one of the sites that we frequent, like the Shadur was like plus 750 a ways back. And I still think he'll be the first quarterback off the board ultimately. So we'll see what happens with that. But I know Gil and I had a pretty good conversation the other day about, like, if I'm a team, like, I'm more than content taking Travis Hunter or Will Johnson or Mikel Williams or Abdul Carter or Mason Graham. Like, there are a lot of impact defensive players in this draft that you can take early on. And maybe you're able to slide back a couple of spots in the draft. And if there's a desperate team like the Raiders or the Titans that need a quarterback, you can get a little bit of a king's ransom here. So,
I think if you're New England and you lose this week and you clinch the first pick, you auction that pick off and you fill gaps and just, hey, maybe get a one next year, maybe trade down again and just stockpile up. I know Hunter's good, but there's a lot of holes on the team. You figure you have the quarterback. I would do the old, Jimmy Johnson, the old Belichick, the trade down and just get as many bites at the apple as I could.
But that's the fact. I actually like New England this week. Like if there's like one NFL game that like I actually am going to play, like New England getting, I played it at 3. I don't know if there are any 3s left out there now by the time we release this, but like, I don't know if like they care about the number one pick. Like they're talking about May playing, you know, Josh Allen's going to start because he wants to keep that start streak going. But like after he'll play a series and then it's going to be Trubisky and whoever else. I can't see the Bills really going all out here and knowing that you're locked in with the 2 seed. You're going to wind up playing whoever the 7 seed ultimately is, Dolphins, Broncos, whomever. So I could actually see New England putting up a bit of a fight here and potentially winning this game.
I've heard both ways. I've heard they're considering May, but early in the week it was, hey, we're going to consider everything. We consider resting May. I even heard like maybe they'd play Joe Milton, which is the ultimate.
Yeah, I saw that.
They should play Millen. I think that the only thing with the coach is he probably is like, man, if I get my ass kicked here by 17, I'm going to be getting some other coach the number one. I'm going to be getting Vrabel or somebody the first day where, you know, he's not going to keep his job. So I don't know.
Yeah, that was like Lovey with the Texans the year that they tried to beat the Colts in the final game. And basically, he basically said, F you. He's like, I know you're going to fire me. Why the hell am I going to try and lose a game and help this organization out? And they won the game in an odd way. It kind of worked out for him because the next year in the draft, they wound up with Stroud and Anderson.
I think if you're the Patriots, you know what? You make up your decision before the game. If you have to fire him before the game, or if you're going to bring him back, tell him straight up, hey, we're bringing you back, but the goal here is to score fewer points than the Bills this week. That first pick, even in a down year, is worth a lot. Even the difference between like the first and the second pick, like you can get a lot of capital for it. So I don't know. Last one here, baseball. Last time I had you on, like I mentioned, Soto just it was an hour before Soto signed with the Mets. Yankees, I think, have had a nice pivot. Good bullpen. We'll see what Goldschmidt has left. We'll see if, Bellinger here, hopefully he's not the next Joey Gallo. I'm not going to go as far as to say, hey, they're a better team than last year, but it's a different team than last year. I still think they need a piece or two and you need to keep Judge healthy, but I like the team. What are your thoughts on the Yankees and anything else baseball related?
Yeah, I do like them. I think losing Soto sucks. I mean, that's a big deal. And the interesting thing that the aside is, remember, there was a lot of steam in early December too about Soto going to the Red Sox. And I grabbed Red Sox 17-1 to win the American League right before that. I don't know what number is there now. It's probably pretty close to that, but in a weird way, the Red Sox really, I think, maybe improved themselves too. And I know we don't know what Walker Buehler has left, but if he can give him something on a short deal, and like that's a pretty damn good rotation they got going. And the young players that they have, like the Red Sox might be a team that's a little forgotten about in that division because of the Yankees with Bellinger and Goldschmidt. And then obviously Soto leaving. And of course you got the Orioles but I don't know, them losing Burns, like the Orioles have done less with more than any team out there. They show that they're really not willing to part with these young players and prospects that they have. It's almost like it's kind of like the CLV people who would like rather like say we got like 6 points of closing line value and lose the bet than maybe just take it, lay a half a point more than normal or not have any CLV at all. And it's like the Orioles would like much rather be like, hey, we got all these prospects, the future is bright, and they never win anything.
No, and I had Parles on, I think, the Monday pod, and he's very high in the Yankees just because, you know, a lot of the reasons you're mentioning were the American League. It's just like Houston's in a mini rebuild. Seattle, Texas, we'll see. The AL Central we saw in the playoffs. I mean, you can't take any of those teams seriously. Right. Baltimore kind of has to prove it. The Red Sox will be better, but are they at that level yet? And I was actually thinking of, looking for playoff odds. If you can get the Red Sox, like, plus money to make the playoffs, I don't know if it'll be that, even around even money. I think that's probably a good bet for them to make the playoffs, but like you could say the Yankees, all right, they're going to fall off a little bit with no Soto. Absolutely. You're going to lose a guy like that. It's going to hurt. But who's really going to like who's head and shoulders above them in the American League? There isn't that team.
Nobody at all. Yeah. Like you would, I mean, even as bad as the White Sox were last year with all the games that bullpen blew. I mean, that was one of our fun, like text threads go last year. Like, hey, White Sox lead 3-2 going to the eighth. Time to bet the opponent at a nice price. And I mean, if you expect them to win a few more games this year against the Tigers and the Twins and the Indians and team Guardians, rather, excuse me, I don't want to get people mad at me. You wouldn't expect to have multiple playoff teams from Central this year. So we'll see.
And you're the belief Ohtani 2-1 is worth a bet for MVP. I know we've talked about this awful.
Yeah, we have. And basically if he stays healthy, if he stays healthy and he pitches and hits every year, how is he not the MVP every year? And I know I took a lot of shit on Twitter about saying Lindor should get some votes. Lindor, by the definition of most valuable, is most valuable. But part of my thinking was exactly what I just said. Like if you gave it to Ohtani this year, in a season where all he did was hit. Yeah, we had an unbelievable offensive season, but if you gave it to him this year, you know he's going to put up pretty damn good offensive numbers every year. And you factor a Cy Young type level season on the mound. Like, he's MVP every single year. So, like, this was the year where the voters could have said, hey, you know what? Maybe by definition, Lindor is most valuable, and he could have won. But yeah, no, 2-1 on Ohtani MVP is it's something that everybody should just have in their account and forget about.
Yeah, and who knows? Lindor probably wasn't going to win anyway, but he got hurt that last week, 10 days, yep. And that really killed any opportunity.
Yeah, he was never going to win.
Yeah. Bear, appreciate it, man. Bear Betts Podcast, Fox, what else? Zach, Chris Felica.
That's it. That's it.
And everything. All right.
That's it.
So direct all of your hate there. But other than that, man, appreciate the time. Thanks for coming on.
Of course.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. Rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to Chris Felica. Appreciate the reviews coming in. Try to leave more reviews. Borrow somebody's phone, or friend, or girlfriend, or wife, anybody. Leave a review. We'll try to do some. We will do some more giveaways going forward. Leave as many as possible. Give yourself a better chance to win. Do some giveaways here on Twitter, as we did last week. So look for those. But enjoy the weekend, the final weekend of the regular season. Talk to you Monday.